God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. He spoke. The Lord said, let there be light. Because we believe we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home was with Jesus Christ in his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. I've never received more emails from the AFR audience. I told the story last week, news story, about mass industrial level surrogacy, the buying and selling of babies. And I had a number of people contact me to say they didn't know this was going on, and the AFR audience, praise God, is so well informed given the history of this network. Because I've never received this volume of email from this audience before, I want to share something with you. It is most of the interview I did with a dear friend of mine, Katie Faust, an author and an activist on behalf of children's rights. Katie has studied industrial surrogacy. She spoke with me in my podcast. The entire interview is available in video form at video.thetoddhermanshow.com. Katie Faust, author and activist, informed me about this industrial level surrogacy, and I want you to hear part one of that interview here. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Thanks again for having me. I'm so grateful that you are shedding light on this very disturbing situation, because it is not the first and it's not going to be the last.
Yeah, and that was the thing, is when I came upon this story, this vet in Chicago, there are people who would run a story like that because it can anger people. It's, for instance, in talk radio, there's this thing called the hot segment. That's when you roll your show and your job is to get people upset. And it used to be that's how you get the phones rolling. This is how you get the text response going. And so it's sensationalism. But really, I think what I want people to know is all the parts are in place. The industry is set up. The paychecks are cashable. And men like this can go transact business like this easily, Katie. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So what we've got right now stands in stark contrast to the adoption institution. So before I was a mom, I worked at the largest Chinese adoption agency in the world. I was responsible for compliance with international, federal, and state level standards. And what I learned in adoption was that there's a lot of different requirements to make sure that adoption is actually an institution centered around the well-being of children. What's happening right now in big fertility in general and surrogacy specifically is a violation of all of the norms and best practices we've put in place when it comes to adoption. So you look at this situation with this pedophile who has acquired a child through surrogacy or was about to right before they happened to catch him for child pornography charges, where he's verbalized plans to victimize this new infant child that he has procured. What you've got here is something where an unrelated man, well, he and or his husband are unrelated to the child because neither of them can be both biologically related, where you've got the child going home with an unrelated man or two to men who likely would never have passed a background adoption screening, men who have directly paid for the child to be sold by their biological mother and their birth mother to be taken home to a house where there will be no female love or presence at all. And so what you've got here is not the institution of adoption centered around the well-being of children. You have a marketplace. Big fertility is a marketplace centered around the desires of adults. And what we have with big fertility is anyone that can has the money to put together sperm, egg, and womb can take that child home with full parental authorities without ever having gone through any kind of scrutiny, background check, screening, or home study. This is the perfect avenue for child predators to acquire children.
And I would say, as bad as that is, it's the perfect business model for people who want to build stables of kids brought into this world to be put into cages and abused by men, largely men. And I would ask you this question. Do you think, Katie, that there is, I don't think there's any comparison, but do you have a problem with or challenge with, or how do you view sort of old fashioned surrogacy? And I ask this question because I get a dear couple friends of mine. They were having trouble holding on to a pregnancy. They could conceive, but they couldn't hold on. And they had prayed about, so they're both served the Lord Jesus really well. They had prayed about, hey, what if we had the wife's sister carry the baby Everybody knows each other. Everybody's in a familiar relationship. At an appropriate age, you would have told the child, hey, here's what we did so that we could bring you into the world. Mm-hmm. And in that case, it's sort of old-fashioned-ish. They ultimately were able to hold on to a pregnancy through in vitro, his sperm, her egg. So all everything but the medical intervention. But they thought about that. Do you have the same challenges with that form of surrogacy versus this industrial scale manufacturing of babies?
Mm-hmm. So it's very important to understand exactly what surrogacy is.
Yeah.
And the best way to understand what surrogacy is it is splicing what should be one person mother into three purchasable and or optional women. So who are those three mothers? Number one is the genetic mothers. This is the woman that contributes the egg, 50% of the child's genetic heritage, 50% of their genetic identity. This person is going to help children answer the question, who am I? Because they can answer the question, whose am I? So the genetic mother, not optional for children. The second one is the birth mother, the woman with whom the child forms their first connection, their first love. In fact, the only person that the child knows for the first 9.5 months of their life. That is the foundation for trust and attachment. The child should see the birth mother they already know the day they're born for the first time, not the last. And this is so critical because it is that woman, that birth mother, who lowers cortisol rates in the child when the baby is hungry, tired, afraid, cold. It is her presence, because she is the only familiar thing in the child's world, that can drop baby's stress hormones and soothe the baby. So that relationship is not optional for children. And then the third mother is the social mother, the daily presence of a female parent who is perfectly complementing the father's role in the child's life in ways that are distinct from the dad, in the way she talks, disciplines, connects, and cares for and nurtures the child. Women do things for babies that men don't do. So what surrogacy does is it splices what should be one woman mother into genetic mother, birth mother, and social mother, and says, which one do you want? Which one do you not have? Which one do you need to purchase or rent temporarily? And some children, like the case that you described before, sort of the ideal surrogate arrangement where no money changes hands and the child goes home with the genetic parents. What is surrogacy? Well, the child retains the birth mother, keeps the social mother, and loses the birth mother. So you're still asking the child to sacrifice that relationship with the only person they know the day that they are born. And we have enough experience with adoption to know that that bond is not inconsequential. It actually is something that allows children to form and maintain and build healthy trust and attachment. What we see in adoptees who lost their mother at birth, even though they are adopted by people who are on average wealthier, better educated, who statistically spend more time with kids, who statistically have more stable marriages, those kids still struggle, because you cannot manipulate or cut off the bond with the birth mother without some kind of lifelong risk.
Yeah.
So that's the best way to think about surrogacy. And from that perspective, there's no form of surrogacy that is permissible. It is always a process that requires the weak children to sacrifice for the strong adults.
Yeah. And so I love the way you put that and explained the splicing. That's very, very profoundly important. It reminds me, I watched a video. We talked about your article last week, and there's a video of an influencer, a so-called trans man with his purposeful 5 o'clock shadow and fake blonde hair. And he got to pretend to have given birth, go into the hospital, sit in the hospital bed, and they bring this newborn baby and put him on his hair, put that little child on his hairy chest. Mm-hmm. And that child is now ripped from the only thing he's ever known. And on this hairy chest, no cortisol, no connection, no biological connection. Katie Faust is with us, and there's a link to Katie's books in the show sheet, links. And we'll talk about the new book, because I don't yet know the name, and I'm excited for it. I know a little bit about it. But Katie, you wrote a piece in The Federalist about five accused pedophiles who seem to me to be pretty clearly pedophiles.
They were pedophiles. Yeah. They were just trying to be extremely careful with the title, but right. They were pedophiles.
Right. And this doctor, this vet in Chicago, he's accused, right? He's accused, mm-hmm. seems to me to be pretty clearly guilty, but he's accused. Mm-hmm. In this case, these five men, and I think one couple, or two couples, one same-sex attracted, yeah. one in heteronormative couple,
yeah.
they purchased babies. So run us through this and how they did this. And some of these cases are so astonishing that even one of the men got the baby back, I understand, some sources say.
Yeah, it's nuts. So really what this is this is an unvetted, unknown way to acquire children. Now, in the adoption process, if you are going to place children with an unrelated adult, that is an inherently risky situation. That is why adoptive parents like me and like many of you have to go through extensive vetting. We get fingerprinted, right? We have somebody come to our house, look at this. And then after the baby is placed with us, we have somebody come back to see how the kid is doing. And so it is very, very important for it to be a child-centric process in adoption. That is actually one of the reasons why we have safeguards around it, is because social workers recognize that placing children with unrelated adults is risky. That's why we have all these processes. So what's going on with these child predators, these pedophiles that have acquired children in a variety of different, you know, countries, but all through surrogacy, is there was no screening and background check. They were not known to authorities a lot of the time. Sometimes the pedophilic tendencies were revealed only after the child was placed with them. Sometimes they were charged, like the Israeli pedophile that I list in the document. He had already been charged, but the surrogacy agency didn't know because they don't do any kind of screening or background checks. And if they did, there's no processes or rules saying that the child cannot be handed over to that man, even if there is. One of those cases was the situation, very, very famous case of baby Gammy. This was the case that actually made Thailand stop doing all foreign surrogacies altogether. This commissioning couple from Australia created two in vitro babies. They implanted it in the surrogate in Thailand. And then one of the babies had a disability. One of the babies was Down syndrome, the little boy. And they decided to take the little girl, Pippa, home. And they actually wanted the surrogate to abort the baby because they didn't want a disabled child. The surrogate said, no, I'm going to keep this baby. So she did. She kept and she raised the baby named Baby Gammy. So what was discovered later on is that the dad, David, in Australia, already had spent time in prison for molesting young girls. And it was the little girl, Pippa, that he took home. And so in that case, the authorities, finally, it came to their attention that this little child that was commissioned through a surrogate, through processes that did not involve any kind of background checks, was now living with the pedophile father. But because he had not reoffended, they did not remove the child from his care. So you've got all of these situations where a lot of times the child goes home with the single man, and maybe there's red flags, but the authorities can't do anything about it because, you know what? He's the only legal parent that they have. The birth mother, the genetic mother, has sold her rights. Sometimes she's unknown because it was an anonymous egg donor. All surrogacy contracts make it very clear that the surrogate cannot have custody. So even if they want to keep the child, even if they are the genetic mother, very often they are not allowed to have any parental rights or parental authority. The contract reigns supreme. The contract decides who is the parent. And because the contract is not preceded by any kind of background checks or screenings, the intended parent, which might be the pedophile man, gets the baby in all cases. So there's one other contrast here, and that is that, you know, people will say, well, adoption, there's so much money spent in adoption, and in surrogacy, there's so much money spent in surrogacy. So like, what's the difference? The difference is when adoptive parents like me and like a lot of your listeners went through that process, we did pay a lot of money, but none of my money went to my son's birth mother to hand the baby over to me. That actually is the bright red line when it comes to legitimate adoptions, that if money ever goes from the intended parents to the genetic father, the genetic mother, or the birth mother, it's no longer adoption. That is categorically child trafficking, and the agency and the intended parents will be jailed. In big fertility, surrogacy, sperm donation, egg donation, that whole industry is built on direct payments from intended parents to genetic father, genetic mother, and birth mother. It is categorically child trafficking. This is not some benevolent nonprofit. This is baby buying and baby selling, very often wrapped up in the name of progress.
Right, and it's wrapped up in the technique that the devil's so famous for, which is masquerading as an angel of light. We'll continue with this discussion with Katie Faust, author of Them Before Us, and a book called Raising Conservative Kids in a Woke City, a child's rights activist and a Christian woman, as she'll explain more about this industrial surrogacy, the buying and selling of children. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Coming up, we'll get to the Tower of Babbling. Right now, you're listening to an interview with a dear friend of mine, Katie Faust. She's an activist on behalf of children's rights. She is a Christian woman. She's a mother. She's the wife of a pastor. And she's been studying industrial surrogacy, the mass creation of babies, and then selling of those babies, often to same-sex attracted men.
Yes.
And this is sold as, well, same-sex attracted couples can't have babies. So this happened. There's other people who can't have babies, so this needs to happen. And there's a range of ways to respond to this. Adoption, as you've done, and many of the listeners and viewers of the show have done, right? Clearly that's been happening. But here's where I think people will maybe not really track how big this is there are entire states. You'll remember this. You'll remember this so well. Back in the day, God rest Rush, when I was filling in for Rush Limbaugh, I'd shared what was going on in the separate country of Washington. I was on Frank Turek's show, great, great Christian apologist, and talked about your work. And I'd mentioned the fact that in the separate country of Washington state, you can purchase babies in bulk. And even Frank, who's a friend, sent me a note and said, hey, I trust you totally, what you said. And I trust Katie's work. I've looked at her. She's great. Got to have her on the show. Please send me links on this because I'm getting absolutely pelted with people saying, no way, that's not happening. I live in Washington state. You can't purchase babies here. Is the separate country of Washington the only state in the United States that's actually created a huge marketplace in response to this demand? Mm-hmm.
Now, any place where the big fertility moves in and commercial surrogacy sets up shop is a hub of baby buying, baby selling, and not just baby buying and selling, but baby designing and baby discarding. I mean, actually, when you look at what's going on just with IVF alone, what you see is only 2-7% of lab created babies are going to be born alive. And so honestly, when you look at people that are victimizing children's right to life, big fertility destroys more embryonic lives every year than Planned Parenthood does. So not only do you have victimization of children's right to life, but once you're making babies in a laboratory and then you legalize commercial surrogacy, which Washington state did in 2018, now it's just a free for all. Like now you can you can customize your child, deliver them to any and every kind of adult, any different arrangement, any multiplicity of parents. I mean, when we overhauled the definition of parenthood in 2018 under the Uniform Parentage Act, we didn't even really specify how many people could be a parent. So we opened the door to multiple parents. How often is this happening? What's going on? We don't know, because big fertility has no kind of rules or requirements to even report. What are they doing with these babies? How many abortions take place based on commercial surrogacy? How many children are being frozen? How many of these embryonic babies are being donated to research? What's going on? What's their health? Where are they going? You know, if in an adoption, you want to take children across state lines, let alone international lines, that child is going to be tracked and widely known. These kids, they disappear to the ends of the earth. Nobody even knows that they exist a lot of the time. And so we are seeing, we don't exactly know how children are being victimized until we find these reports of pedophiles that have openly stated that they plan on violating and victimizing their new custom ordered child. Wouldn't it be amazing if somebody actually, if these babies were known to authorities so that we could actually see how they're faring and track them and do some kind of follow-up like every adoptive parent in the world? No, because that would infringe on big fertility's business model and unfortunately damage their profits. And so everywhere that I go that we fight against big fertility, that is what we see: resistance to any kind of tracking or regulation, because this is one of the most lucrative wings of the medical industry, and they will not be bothered by the petty concerns of children living and children not being victimized by predators.
And people need to understand this, Katie. This is so, it's so fundamentally true of what's been happening in the fallen medical system. And I want to make clear, I know there's great doctors watching and are listening, nurses, et cetera. I know that. I know that you may well serve the Lord Jesus in your capacity there. I know that the most people get into that business to try to help people. But here's some things that are just so, so clear to me in terms of pattern recognition. The state of Oregon outlawed tracking the efficacy of wrong sex hormones and chemical sexual mutilation of children. You don't get to do that. They don't want to have that information. Same thing is true in many states. No, it's a privacy issue. We can't track that down. That's a privacy issue. That's one comparison. The other is, you just mentioned Planned Parenthood, industrial level abortion, murdering babies because babies don't matter. On the other hand, they're clumps of cells. On the other hand, industrial level production of babies, because babies matter. And at the center of this are these adult desires and a really fallen medical system. There's one other case I wanted to bring out of your article. Just I wanted to focus on one thing, because people say, okay, so you have sick people. I would say people with sin problems, uniquely bad sin problems in my mind. But it's not mechanical. It's not like this is actually taking kids into sex trafficking. So there's a case I want to share from your article. Katie, your article in The Federalist, also linked in the show notes, contained the story of a couple, I believe, who employed a Russian woman as a surrogate mother, the birth mother, as it were, in your splicing of motherhood roles. $8,000, and they were able to bring a baby into the world. And then that baby was taken through what one official described as the worst sex ring he'd ever seen. This was Mark Newton and Peter Trung, 2013. $8,000 to a Russian surrogate. The abuse began just days after his birth, and over 6 years, the couple traveled the world offering up for sex with at least eight men, according to the police reports. And they were going through a syndicate called Boy Lovers Network. So this does happen, that these kids are then, God forbid the language, rented out. And that we're aware of groups like Boy Lovers Network, and we're aware of the phrase minor attracted person. How prevalent do you think, this is a wild guess, but how prevalent do you think this is right now, this sort of abuse?
So I don't know. Nobody knows. The only time that we find out is when we uncover, you know, the transactional nature of what's going on online through these sting operations. So we don't exactly know. But what we do know is there's been a massive explosion in demand by single, double, and triple men when it comes to acquiring children through surrogacy. There are entire international organizations devoted to delivering motherless children to men. There's an organization called Men Having Babies, and they have conferences all over the world. Very lucrative, very well organized. And if you look at some of the screenshots, go to Twitter, go to their website, you'll just see conference floors full of men listening to presentations about how do you get the baby that you want. Maybe some of them intend to love them and care for them, but many of the people that are in there have figured out, okay, I want access to a kid. A woman isn't going to give it to me because I've creeped her out, or I can't find a woman that's willing to partner with me or have a child with me. And I certainly can't pass an adoption screening, or maybe I've tried to adopt, but no woman wants to hand her newborn over to a single 45-year-old guy, or maybe I'm 60 years old and like I'm out of the childbearing years, but I can still get a child through surrogacy. And so we have organizations that will just explain and create a pathway for men to acquire children, again, with no kind of screening and vetting or tracking. I mean, you're talking about the medical industry. When we want to track things, we do. I mean, my friend donated her kidney to another friend of ours, like a couple of years ago. And do you know how heavily involved they were in matching, pairing, tracking, following up, monitoring afterwards? I mean, like, we do not treat organs as callously as we do children when it comes to these new new technologies, right, where we are learning to manipulate and tinker with children at the moment of conception. So we don't know. It's a really big problem that we don't know, but we are about to find out, because unfortunately, I think that the explosion of men who are trying to gain access to infant children, that has increased so much. And the predators are now seeing that this is a pathway to gain access to children that previously a lot of the traditional pathways had been closed off to them, you know, until we had these new wonderful technologies.
You faced, as an author who writes about, I guess this shouldn't be controversial topics, that this shouldn't be them before us, placing kids' needs before the desires of adults, that shouldn't be controversial. The decision to raise conservative kids in a woke city, I guess if you're a wild leftist, that's controversial. Mm-hmm. What has been the response from people who are pro-industrial surrogacy? I'm wondering if it's as vitriolic and hate-filled as some of the things you and I both hear. I mean, we both get that stuff, maybe you more than me these days. But what's been that response, emotional-like, and as people push back, has it been as vitriolic as the other topics you cover?
Well, the number one thing is we have to actually say this is a harmful practice for children.
Yeah.
And that first scenario that you spelled out is the thing that actually has done so much heavy lifting for the big fertility industry of this is just one woman helping another woman have a child with no money. I mean, that's the picture that many people have of surrogacy.
They cast it that way? They're casting it that way.
They get so much mileage out of that misconception because that has happened. It does exist. I know people who have used surrogacy in that way. That is not the majority of what's happening in surrogacy today. You know, altruistic surrogacy where the woman does it for free, whether she's a friend or a sister or just a nice, helpful stranger. You know, we've had the ability to have altruistic surrogacy in a lot of different states across this country. New York, for example, that had the Baby M case. That was the first time that surrogacy really hit the headlines in the 80s, where there was a huge like controversy over who wants this, because the birth mother was like, actually, I love this child and I want to keep them and I can't give them up, right? So New York actually had very hard lines against commercial surrogacy for that reason. But they still had altruistic surrogacy, but that wasn't enough. And they passed commercial surrogacy in New York City, in New York State during COVID. And the sponsors were a couple of gay men who said, this isn't fair. We couldn't find anybody in New York that was willing to do it for free. We had to go to California and pay a woman in California. And so they had to make commercial surrogacy legal. Why? Because most women will not rent out their body to what is 100% of the time a high-risk pregnancy unless they're getting paid tens of thousands of dollars. And so I think the first thing we need to do is explode this myth that surrogacy is just about an infertile couple having a baby. That is not what it is. What surrogacy is in practice is on-demand designer babies shipped worldwide to a lot of adults who never, ever would be able to acquire children otherwise. This is, quite frankly, not just the buying and selling of babies, but the designing and discarding and destruction of babies.
So I guess I'm asking, are you being called an anti-gay bigot for this? So the altruistic surrogacy is a big major defense. It seems pretty effective. So I'm glad I asked the question, but you are getting the, oh, well, you're a homophobe and you're a transphobe and those things still on this.
Well, and let's talk about this, right? There was a Wall Street Journal article that came out yesterday or the day before that was like 20 years of gay marriage and like none of the problems that the big traditional marriage supporters said were going to happen have materialized. I'm like, oh yeah, except every single one of us that said, if you make husbands and wives optional in marriage, mothers and fathers become optional in parenthood. And that's exactly what has happened. And last week I shared the story of two gay men in New York who were like, we're married, but we're still being discriminated against because the state won't pay for our IVF, subsidize our egg donor, and pay for our surrogate. And that's discrimination, right? So we went from 10 years ago, like, get out of our bedroom. Why can't you just let us live freely, to subsidize the creation of our intentionally motherless child that is going to go home with two men that have never had any kind of background check or screening. And so I am like very clear, like I'm opposed to surrogacy in all cases for all people, paid or commercial, traditional or gestational, whether or not the child loses one, two, or all three mothers. It is always an injustice for the child. And so people come at me and they're like, well, you're anti-gay. And I'm like, no, I'm actually not. I am pro-child. But yes, the same kind of emotional manipulation that the LGBT world has used in every other culture war battle is being leveled against people that say, actually, you shouldn't buy and sell kids. And the good news is, I think that for most of us, all of those, that name calling has absolutely lost its bite because children are being victimized. And I mean, like, I'm not going to stand for it anymore. And I think there's a lot of people that are agreeing.
I would say this, that the abuse, the unspeakable things done to children, the many government schools turning these kids into angry, drug addicted, racist little sex bots, those are all horrible issues and they're non-eternal. To speak into the world the true light of Christ, and of course, to let him shine through us in the way of speaking truth and grace and speaking about these issues without accusing all the time everybody of being evil in this, although there's a lot of evil in it and some people are vitally evil. But I think it's that, the counterfeiting of Christ, that is the biggest threat to kids because it's eternal.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I will tell you where you're going to see the rubber meet the road is it is when you have a full picture of who God is as creator, as distinct from his creation, his ordered universe, his moral law. When you see all of that, what you get is you get a population, the only population that is able to effectively answer the question, what does it mean to be human? And what you see in all of our major cultural, economic, political, national issues, everything that we're dealing with today ultimately comes down to that question. And if you get that question wrong, what does it mean to be human? You're going to get everything else wrong, right? You're not going to be able to answer, what is the role of government? What is the nature of government? What should it be? What is our relationship to the economy? What should that look like? And obviously, you're going to get all of the cultural issues wrong in terms of, can a boy become a girl? Can we force life into existence and force it out of existence? Do we get to decide who lives and dies when it comes to euthanasia? It is a time for Christians to be very clear about all of doctrine, the nature of God, certainly the nature of salvation, how do you get saved? But very close on the heels is, what is the nature of man? Who is man that you have made him and that you regard him? And it is that we are image bearers, made in the image of God, male and female, he created them. He creates, he takes. It is not us, that is outside of our purview. And so it is actually a moment where Christians need to, you know, it says in the New Testament, watch your life and your doctrine carefully, because in it you will save yourself and your hearers.
Again, that was an interview with Katie Faust. You can get the entire interview at thetoddhermanshow.com, or if you want to watch it in video, subscribe at video.thetoddhermanshow.com. We'll come back and wrap up this show with the Tower of Babbling and a heartbreaking note. And I'll issue a trigger warning about it as we continue. This is A Disciple's View on AFR. Disciples View, I'm Todd Herman. I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I've never received more emails on any topic from the AFR audience than I have on this industrial surrogacy. I just heard an interview with my friend Katie Faust, who's a children's rights activist, a Christian woman, and an author. And just to prove the point, this email just came in. It's from Amber. Todd, I'm in the middle of listening to your radio program about surrogacy with Katie Faust. I've got to say, it's the best show I've heard in a long time, even though all your shows are great. Katie's so eloquent and precise. With the harm that this industrial surrogacy perpetrates against babies, it's just truly evil. I'm so thankful to have heard her passion and conviction. My heart breaks for the cruelty committed against these innocents. Her voice needs to be amplified and surrogacy outlawed. Thank you, Amber. This is because of AFR. You get to have news like this because God had a plan that matched the vision of Brother Don, Don Wildman. God has given the Wildman family the task of stewarding this network. You, when you become a monthly supporter, you are added to the list of stewards, because we will not have the Mockingbird Media informing people about what we just informed. In fact, in commercial radio, and no offense to commercial radio, you don't get to do back-to-back segments, not even on a topic as important as this. But this network has an audience of one, that is God Almighty, a family of many, that's you. And then, of course, the people given the task of stewarding this network, many of them behind the scenes you'll never hear from. And, of course, again, you. If you're not yet a monthly donor, you can do that at AFR.net. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called The Tower of Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
Culture is a reflection of our moment and our time. And present culture is the way we express how we're feeling about the moment.
The Tower of Babbling.
Three sound bites in the Tower of Babbling that I think prove my point about the feature, God allowing these people their moment in the sun. On NBC, and this is the second time this week we've played something from Christian Welker. Here, it was live, actually, it was yesterday. What was it yesterday? We played a clip of Christian Welker telling Marco Rubio he had to commit to accept the election results no matter what happened. And Marco Rubio said, no, if it's not a fair election, that needs to be called out. Now, Christian Welker on NBC seems to suggest or even state that NBC did not censor the Hunter Biden laptop story.
What undermines elections is when NBC News and every major news outlet in America in 2020 censored the Biden laptop story, which turned out to be true, not Russian misinformation, unprecedented. Only you couldn't even talk about it on social media. They would deplatform you. People look at all this. They look at what happened in Arizona, 200,000 ballots that had the signatures didn't match. People will lose confidence, and it opens the door to this.
I have to jump in here. Senator, you voted to certify the election, and
because at that stage in the process, you have no options.
Senator, you voted to certify the election. Nothing has been censored on this program.
Well, as a matter of fact, yes, it was. And as a matter of fact, Christian Welker wouldn't let President Trump during the debate, wouldn't let him talk about the Hunter Biden laptop story. She censored it there. Next clip in the Tower Babbling. This is sad. I am a Christian conservative populist. No, let me say that again. Christian conservative constitutional populist. It's important to be a constitutional populist because populism without a principle is a bad, bad idea. So I make no bones about the fact that I can't vote for the figurehead and I can't seem to find the Democrat for whom I could vote. There's plenty of Republicans I would not vote for either. But it's sad. I should be able to celebrate this cognitive decline of Joe Biden. My heart can't do it. Not since I've been discipled. This man has no idea where he is or what he's done in his life.
And when I was vice president, things were kind of bad during the pandemic. And what happened was Barack said to me, go to Detroit and help fix it. Well, poor mayor, he spent more time with me than he ever thought he was going to have.
Did you hear that? Let's hear that again. Listen closely.
And when I was vice president, things were kind of bad during the pandemic. And what happened was Barack said to me, go to Detroit.
Barack Obama was not president when they decided to capitalize upon the COVID flu that they likely created in a lab in Wuhan using your tax money. And Joe Biden was not vice president. He was president. Well, ish. He was figurehead. Last clip in today's Tower of Babbling. So many people who choose gender defiance or denial, and that's different. It is different from people who are genuinely gender dysphoric, which is a real thing. It's very rare. Genuine gender dysphoria is very rare. It presents itself usually at 2 or 3 years of age where a child is confused. That is almost always helped through talk therapy, almost always. Is something that kids can straighten out almost always. And it's a difference, though, in people choosing gender defiance or gender denial. And it's almost always simply a form of the sin of being narcissistic. For instance, we're told that it is so-called transphobic if a man will not date a man who pretends to be a woman. So if you are a heteronormative, heterosexual man, and you will not date a man, well, that's transphobia. But this person, sad young person doing everything they can to mask their gender or sex, including very frightening makeup, has another bit of information for people in regard to how we must treat the most powerful class of people in the world, those who are gender defiant.
I'm here to talk about why T for T is acceptable, but a cis person wanting to date specifically trans people isn't. And honestly, it's a simple answer. The reasoning behind why each group wants to date trans people. Trans people are T for T because they feel it's a matter of safety. They would be safer if they only dated other trans people. And there's an added bonus of always having something in common. However, when cis people specifically want to date trans people, there's no reason other than fetishization. If you have a really good reason as to why you, a cis person, wants to date trans people, that's fine. However, I honestly cannot think of any besides fetishization.
So, doing away with all the nonsense word, there's no such thing as a cis person. There are men or there are women. Occasionally, they're intersex people. What that person is saying, aside from all the gibberish words, is this. Truth. there is no reason for anyone to selectively date someone who is suffering from a psychosis of gender confusion or gender denial other than fetish. It's weird that she slips into truth or he slips into truth, and it's hard to tell. Sad. But it is part of the Tower babbling. Words like cisgender and trans are just that. They're just babbling. And that's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
I love Venn diagrams. I really just love Venn diagrams.
On a Disciple's View.
A trigger warning on this email. It's about the topic of suicide. And I'll just state flat out, I'm not a mental health professional or anything like that. I've spent a lot of time in mental health. My dad was a master of social work. My mom is a master's degree in education, early childhood development. I have a certificate in helping families deal with borderline personality disorder young people. But I'm not a professional. So I just want to make that clear. And yes, a trigger warning that this contains the topic of suicide. And it comes from a kind listener who wrote me. And this is the note from Nathan. And it's a sad note. It's a brave one. Hey, Todd, I heard your comment on people you know who committed suicide. I just walked in and heard something about getting praised one day and busted in the mouth the next by a father, and you blame the father for the suicides. I only partly agree because every person is responsible for their own actions. They had to make that decision. My mom, grandfather, and 35-year-old nephew, last October, all made that decision. My mother was the last of my grandparents' three children. One in a car wreck, the other from AIDS, and then my mother, who shot herself. My nephew shot himself. My grandmother was a Christian, but my grandfather was very much against, quote, religion. He shot himself, 357 Blackhawk, in his shop. My grandmother found him. When she got home from church, they all had pretty bad upbringing. In the end, they had to make their own choice. But in Genesis, God cursed the serpent first and cursed him hard. I don't read anywhere in there where he even touched Adam or Eve, but he had some kind of blame on him to receive a curse like that. And God started with, because thou hast done this. I had so many horrible influences in my life. And yes, I led a pretty bad life for a while. I detested alcohol and drugs because that was the beginning of the downfall of all these family members I mentioned. My sister died from fentanyl in October 2021. But I had my own horrible sin that ran my life. For a reason, I ended up placing my faith in our Christ, our Jesus. I tried so hard to get my nephew to place his faith in him. He knew the gospel but was afraid to make the commitment. The week before he did it, he asked me, how do I just say, I got Jesus so everything's okay? I tried so hard to explain to him that it's not saying everything's okay. It's the peace he gives regardless of how bad it gets. It was literally the next weekend that he pulled the trigger. I talked to him so many times about Jesus, I can't solely blame all the bad stuff he had to go through in his life for his decision, but I can't say I didn't try to lead him to a different decision. Dang, the truth hurts. I'm not even really sure why I'm writing all of this. I'm so thankful to God for letting me ask Jesus into my heart when I was about 28. Praise God, Nathan, that you are with the Lord. And, gosh, it sounds like a demonic attack on your family. It just does. So much pain. You are going to be a difference maker. You are going to break a pattern. You are going to be a life bringer. You are going to be a disciple maker. You have been given an incredible, incredible gift. The kingdom of heaven now dwells within you. A family with so much pain, so many deaths from suicide. God does not call the equipped. He equips the called. Has it occurred to you that you've been called into a ministry of sorts? A ministry against suicide, which you spoke so eloquently about the book of Genesis that, in fact, God did go after the serpent hard. He, of course, though, removed Adam and Eve from the garden. And then, just before they walked out, our loving, beautiful Father said, wait, you're going to get cold out there. Let me give you some animal skins to wear. Even then, as they turn their back on him, chosen to be, try to be like him, in that great, great original sin, God wouldn't let them walk away where they could go be chilled. I say this from time to time on live radio because God has people tune in. If you're hearing this and you are feeling suicidal, may it present the reality to you, you will not end your existence. You may choose where you spend eternity, and it may not be where you want to. But there's this. You're also not ending pain. No, you're not. You're shifting it. You're taking the pain you feel right now, and it's probably immense, and it hurts. Sometimes people just don't see you, or they don't respect the fact that you're really hurting. I have been there. I was a person who decided to kill myself. My mom and my sister and my dad leapt in, and they prevented it in a really dramatic way. So I can tell you, I know what it was like for me to believe things would never get better. If you're at that position, understand this. You don't know what's going to get better. And I know this. Look around you at the people who still love you, and they're there. And you'd be handing them your pain. If you're a dad, you'd be saying to your kids, carry my pain. Instead, give it to Jesus. He can carry all of it. And if you feel like people don't love you, please come to the body of Christ. Please come to a biblically observant church with small groups and go to the pastoral team and ask what group helps people with these suicidal thoughts. And guess what? Just as God cloaked Adam and Eve before he sent them out of the garden, he'll cloak you. You find the right church, he'll cloak you. He'll bring you in from the cold. Do not hand on the pain. At least know this. Even from afar, we love you because God loved us first. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, until God decides we can speak again together. May his peace wash over you. On behalf of AFR, I'm Todd Herman. This has been A Disciple's View.